It was kind of inspired by this popular song called "A Whole New World," which is, you know, it's about a whole new world, and it's quite a catchy tune. Some of you may have heard it, and I don't know all the lyrics, but there is another song called "From a Distance," and this is quite an interesting song too. And I have the lyrics of that one, and I want to read them to you because it's quite enlightening. And this is a song sung by Bette Midler. It says, "From a distance, from a distance, the world looks green and the snow-capped mountains white. From a distance, the ocean meets the stream and the eagles take to flight. From a distance, there is harmony and it echoes through the land. It's the voice of hope. It's the voice of peace. It's the voice of every man." From a distance, we all have enough, and no one is in need. There are no guns, no bombs, no diseases, no hungry mouths to feed. From a distance, we are instruments marching in a common band, playing songs of hope, playing songs of peace. They're the song of every man. God is watching us. God is watching us. God is watching us from a distance. From a distance, you look like my friend, even though we are at war. From a distance, I cannot comprehend what all the fighting is for. From a distance, there is harmony, and it echoes through the land. It's the hope of hopes. It's the love of loves. It's the heart of every man. God is watching us. God is watching us from a distance. It's an interesting lyrics, brethren. And it is true. If you distance yourself far enough, looking at the earth from the moon, for example, you can't see the wars. You can't see the peoples fighting. And everything seems to melt away. It looks like a gem. If you've ever seen pictures of the moon, I mean of the earth from the moon. And you can't see the pollution. You can't see the wars. You can't see the sickness. You can't see the diseases. Well, brethren, there is a whole new world coming. And we have a direct responsibility in the administration of its governments, its laws, and the rebuilding of the earth under the supervision and direction of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. When Christ returns and we are changed to spirit, the government of this world will change hands. It will go from Satan, the present ruler of this world, to Jesus Christ, the future ruler, and from the demons to the saints. We know that Satan will be bound for 1,000 years, and we will rule with Christ for that 1,000-year period here on earth, as revealed in Revelation 20. Would you like to turn there with me? In Revelation 20, beginning in verse 1, it says, "I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand, and he laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up and set a seal on him so that he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years were finished. After these things he must be released for a little while." And in verse 4, "And I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. And I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for their witness to Jesus and for the word of God, who had not worshipped the beast or his image, and had not received the mark on their foreheads or on their hands, and they lived and reigned with Christ for 1,000 years. Let's also understand one thing, brethren. Satan is totally responsible for the conditions we have in this world. Since he was given that responsibility by God as the God of this world. And we can read about that in 2 Corinthians 4. In 2 Corinthians 4, beginning in verse 3, it says, "But even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing, whose minds the God of this age has blinded, who do not believe, lest the light of the gospel of the glory of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine on them. Therefore, he is responsible for all the pollution, the wars, the famines, the murders, the lies, the thefts in the world. They are a reflection of his rebellious and sick mind. The Day of Atonement pictures the time when he will be put away, and also all the sins of mankind placed on his shoulders. And we know that Christ qualified to replace Satan as future king and ruler of this world. But yet, this is in the future, at his return, pictured by the Feast of Trumpets. Then we'll be ushered in the world tomorrow, the millennium of which these days during the Feast of Tabernacles are picturing. That new, whole new world or age is not going to be ushered in one day, at the wave of a hand, but the earth has to be renewed, cities rebuilt, people's lives turned around. And we know even in the millennium there's resistance at first to Christ's coming, and also for resistance to keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, which we are keeping today. And that's outlined in Zechariah 14. So it's not as if everyone in the world is really anxious to obey God even after the millennium. If you look at verse 18 of Zechariah 14, it says, "And if the family of Egypt will not come up and enter, they shall have no rain, and they shall receive the plague which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all nations that do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." And of course the indication here is that Egypt and other nations are just not going to be willing at first to come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, and they'll need a little prodding. Plagues, no rain. It's amazing how effective that can be. So before we embark on the rebuilding and what is required and the projects we need to be done, let's first look at the present situation. In other words, our world today. Some of this has been discussed before, but review is fine. There hardly is a day that goes by that we don't hear of some bombing going off and innocent people and women and children killed. The terrorist attack on the school in Russia gives us a glimpse into this. And this happened was a little bit over a year ago. I was watching a program on Oprah Winfrey, on TV. And she had a woman from Russia who was part of this group of those terrorists that attacked that gymnasium. And the woman had two children. And she was given a choice by one of the terrorists. Take the youngest child and leave, the six-year-old, and you will live, or stay and you'll all die. That was her choice. How do you make such a choice? I mean, you can imagine how she felt. So she chose to take the younger boy, her six-year-old, and leave her daughter, hoping that she would survive. As it turned out, her daughter was one of the victims. After the terrorists were taken care of by the Russian army, she found her 10-year-old daughter with a major wound in the chest, lying dead on the ground. Not dead, but dying on the ground. And unbelievable as it was, the 10-year-old was trying to console her mother, a victim of terrorism, a victim of Satan's mind. Even as she was dying, she was trying to console her parents. It's just unbelievable. And we live in relative harmony and peace in North America, but these conditions are not worldwide, the peace and harmony we have, but the world is just full of violence. I mean, look at the terrorist attacks here, even in Britain, not that long ago. And it's something that perhaps you're not that familiar with as far as terrorist attacks. And I think America was kind of shocked, you know, at 9/11 too, because it never had an attack on their soil. Iraq and Israel, constant bombings. Suicide bombers, you know, and how do you deal with a mindset of an individual that doesn't care about blowing himself up and blowing up innocent children and women? I mean, you just can't negotiate or deal with those type of situations. And, of course, they all reflect the nature of God, not the nature of the God of this world, Satan, who is cruel and merciless. I believe Mr. Gale mentioned that I was reading an article about a possible attack on the United States again by Al-Qaeda this month of Ramadan. And actually, the date that this article, the author of this article wrote that as a potential date, and Ramadan was from the beginning of October till November 2nd, was actually October 29th, because historically there were some things that happened on that date. So they feel this is a potential date of releasing 6 atomic bombs on 6 cities in the United States to kill women and children. I mean, if that happens, it's just going to be horrible. Let's look at Matthew 24. Matthew 24 and verse 6, it says, "And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See to it that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not here. There are going to be wars on an ongoing basis, and territorial wars and religious wars, ethnic cleansing, as in the Sudan, where there was millions of people displaced, but thousands and thousands that were killed. And ever since Cain killed Abel, we've been having wars on this earth on a continual basis. And in almost 6,000 years of man's existence, I believe there's only been about 90 to 100 years on the earth when there hasn't been a war somewhere of some kind." That's an unbelievable statistic. But here again, it reflects the god of this world, Satan. "Famines due to conflicts in various parts of the world, especially Africa. We have seen famines in these areas due to the dislocation of many people to other regions of the continent." And in verse 7 it says of Matthew 24, "For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilence, and earthquakes in various places." It is a historical fact that there has been famines in various parts of the world for many centuries. But these famines talked about in the Bible will increase in size and intensity. And that seems to be what's happening on a continual basis in these end times. Disease epidemics. And one of the biggest fears is this bird flu that they feel is coming. And I believe the estimate worldwide was somewhere around 50 million people potentially killed. And I know when the Spanish flu went around in 1918, my father-in-law, Delia's dad, was saying in Alberta, there wasn't one family that he knew where there wasn't one death in the family. I mean, and that was, they estimate somewhere around 20 million at that time died. So it's almost twice as many as that. So if we ever get a pandemic, Brendan, there's going to be a lot of deaths worldwide. And of course, these fall of famine is, there's also fear that some terrorist group will, another fear too is a terrorist group will release some kind of biological attack on the U.S. or its allies overseas. And it's amazing how easy this would be. I mean, a little vial that you could put in your pocket inside the water system could make everybody sick in New York. And it'd be such an easy thing to do, releasing these pathogens in the air also. especially if some of these viruses become airborne. I remember reading, and this was in the 60s, an article in Reader's Digest about the government department that were, their job was to make toxins and poisons, you know, for the purpose of war. There was this poison that this chemist that worked for the government had made, and he had the antidote right in front of him, and he had the poison beside him, and he was going to test it on himself. He brought the vial up, the liquid touched his lips, he was immediately paralyzed. He couldn't reach for the antidote, and within 30 seconds, he was dead, bleeding from almost every orifice in his body. And this is the type of stuff that they have, and they've had for over 30 years. Unfortunately, none of this stuff has gotten out yet, but if terrorists ever got a hold of such a pathogen or a poison, they would use it. They would use it on the nations of the West. Of course, I mentioned you've had terrorist attacks in the subway system earlier this year, which caused innocent people to die. And this is a legitimate concern based on what we have seen in the last few years as regards to attacks against both the U.S. abroad and at home, such as the 9/11 attacks in New York. Earthquakes and unusual weather patterns. Look at the biggest disaster ever faced in America was Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita combined. I mean, you had flooding in New Orleans, and they fixed it up, and then, you know, Rita comes along, and it didn't hit New Orleans. It was over actually to the west of it, but it caused waves in that, and so the whole Ninth Ward district was flooded for a second time. And those homes sitting in water for months, literally months, they won't be able to rebuild them. I saw a program on TV where the ones that were sitting in this water had this mold growing up. I mean, this mold growing up the walls, and of course, the humidity gets inside the insulation, and the only way they're going to ever fix a lot of those areas is just bulldoze the whole thing down. And why in the world you would want to rebuild it, a city that's under, you know, under sea level, is beyond me. And yet, the thought is we'll spend billions and billions of dollars to rebuild New Orleans. I mean, if I just bulldoze it over and move somewhere else, I mean, but that's governments for you. And there was thousands of homes lost at thousands and literally hundreds of billions of dollars, the cost of this hurricane. There was whole cities, towns, and of course you don't see this on the news because they concentrated on New Orleans and all the people that were displaced there. But there was little towns a little further north that were totally wiped out. And I saw some pictures on the internet, and it was like a bomb hit this town. It wasn't one building that was left standing, and some of them 90% destroyed. The destruction was unbelievable. And of course, we have seen an increase in earthquakes around the world. And there's a big one predicted for Southern California in the not-too-distant future. It's interesting that the government probably 7 years ago got together and said, what are the three worst disasters that could strike America? One was a terrorist attack on New York. The second one was a major storm hitting New Orleans. And the third one was a major earthquake in Southern California. Two out of those three have happened. In fact, last year, during the feast, during Mr. Harris's sermon, we had a small tremor right during services. I mean, you know, the chairs were moving, and I looked around, and I thought, somebody slammed a door, did the train go by? Well, it was actually a small earthquake in Southern California. And then 2 days later, in the middle of the night, the old bed starts rocking and the mirror shaking on the wall, we had a second tremor. And that was the first time that I, you know, consciously was around during an earthquake, and this was just a 4.5. I mean, it's sort of unsettling. You always think the good old terra firma is solid, but during an earthquake and everything's sort of moving around like this, it's very unsettling and very fearful. Yeah. The temperature is supposed to increase some 14 degrees Celsius in the next two decades because of polar melting, which they say will increase storms and weather patterns. The reason is the Earth is exposed from the melting will hold more heat from the sun than if it was ice there, which makes sense. If ice melts and it exposes the ground heats up and it retains the heat and it causes more melting. And of course, that would cause flooding in low-lying areas. Cities that were, you know, low to the sea levels along the coast would be flooded as a result. One of the big concerns today, and I've seen programs on this, is the fear of an asteroid hitting the Earth. And, of course, we know that will happen in the future if you turn to Revelation 8. Revelation 8, beginning in verse 8, it says, "The second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burned with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. And a third of the living creatures of the sea died, and a third of the ships were destroyed." Actually, this sounds like an asteroid hitting the Earth and causing major destruction. It has been estimated that if an asteroid hit the Pacific only 2 kilometers in diameter, it would cause a 1,000-foot tidal wave at the speed of sound to hit one of the coasts of the United States and, of course, other nations too. But, I mean, you saw what the damage did on that tsunami, which was something like a 40- or 50-foot wave down in that area that happened last year in the East Indies. And that killed 250,000 people. I mean, it's hard to imagine a 1,000-foot wave. I mean, you know, coming at you at the speed of sound. Can you imagine the destruction that would do? I mean, there was a rogue wave that hit it. I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a cruise ship going up the Atlantic coast heading for New York, and a rogue wave came out of nowhere. It was 70 feet. And, you know, it hit the boat, and I don't think there was any deaths, but, you know, there was flooding on the upper decks. And the people said, it reminded them of watching the movie The Titanic. Now, if you've ever seen that, special effects are unbelievable. But it reminded them of that. And this was only a 70-foot wave and hitting a large ship. I mean, a 1,000-foot wave is just beyond imagination, how far inland it would go. It would just wipe everything out. And, of course, if it would hit the land, what you have then is dust rising into the atmosphere, blocking out the rays of the sun, and causing cooler temperatures, crop failures, health problems with breathing. It would be a global disaster. And that's a 2-kilometer-sized asteroid. A larger one would wipe humanity off the Earth, which we know God's not going to allow. Let's look at Revelation 8. In verse 11, it said, verse 10, "Then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch, and it fell on a third of the rivers and on the springs of water. And the name of the star is Wormwood, and a third of the waters became wormwood, and many men died from the waters because it was made bitter." Now, this sounds like a comet rather than an asteroid hitting the Earth and causing the waters to be poisoned, because an asteroid is made up of particles rather than a solid object. So it seems like it hits the atmosphere and it breaks up even more, and it comes down and poisons all the rivers. Let's look at some of the problems besetting the United States and other democratic nations around the world. Murder and mayhem. There's an increase in murder, both criminally motivated and drug-related, in the U.S., reaching alarming proportions. You have children murdering children, family violence with no end in sight, and there seems to be no remorse or conscience involved in these crimes. Let's go over to 1 Timothy 4. First Timothy chapter 4, in verse 1, it says, "Now the Spirit expressly says that in the latter days some will depart from the faith, having giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons, speaking lies and hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron. Abortion takes millions, not thousands of lives. I did an article on abortion in 1983. And at the time, it was estimated there were 1.3 to 1.5 abortions in the U.S. and 10 million in Russia. That was in 1983. That's 22 years ago. Ray Zeron brought out current figures in the update. This was last year, and there are some 10 million abortions in the U.S. today. The worldwide figures would be astronomical. I guarantee you there have been hundreds of millions of abortions in the last three decades. The killing of the unborn, hundreds of millions of potential sons and daughters of God. Brethren, this is one of the biggest human tragedies and stories of the history of man. Young girls in schools are allowed to have abortions in Canada and probably the United States without parents' consent or knowledge. Can you imagine that? Having a daughter, gets pregnant, doesn't tell the parents, but talks to a school counselor, they consent her to have an abortion without the parents' knowledge. They can give Ritalin, which is a drug, to children to calm them down if they're overactive in school, legally, without your knowledge or consent. I mean, this is a society we live in. Last year, there was genocide in the Sudan. Tens of thousands were killed with over a million displaced. Drugs. The United States is the biggest user of illegal drugs in the world. And as a result, you have an ever-increasing crime rate for those who need the drugs for their habits. They will steal to pay for it. Families are destroyed over drugs. People are killed. Drugs have been introduced into lower and lower levels of children in schools. It's unbelievable. And pushers don't have conscience. They're just concerned with making money. Afghanistan, now that they have quote unquote democracy, was supposed to be out of the drug trade, because they do grow a lot of poppies there and a lot of heroin. Well, ever since they've had quote-unquote democracy there, the poppy business is booming, the heroin business is booming, and the United States is probably their biggest customer. And of course, there are drugs coming from south of the border, South America and Central America into the United States. I mean, it's unbelievable. The nations of Israel, God's people, being so hooked on drugs and crime. There are active volcanoes, as was mentioned a few days ago, on the verge of blowing and sending ash into the atmosphere, causing unusual weather patterns. They are expecting a part of an island in the Atlantic region to partially slip into the ocean, causing a huge tsunami on the Atlantic coast. And of course, I mentioned this, a major earthquake is expected on the West Coast, and some predicting that San Francisco and parts of California will literally sink into the ocean, because the fault line goes all along there. It comes north of San Francisco, it goes inland, and they figure there's a potential for that whole section just to drop off into the ocean. We have droughts in various parts of the world resulting in famines. In such conditions, locusts come out by the millions, further destroying the crops that are left. And of course, we have seen 4 to 6 hurricanes on the coast. And now there's one out there, I think it's called Wilma, and it's the most powerful one yet. And they predict it's going to hit Florida and carry on. I don't think it's going to turn up, but it's going to carry on and hit parts of Central America sometime tomorrow. So you'd have to conclude, brethren, that God has removed his protection and his blessing from the modern Israelite nations of the United States, Britain, and Australia. In fact, we are under a curse for abandoning God's laws, his statutes, and polluting and abandoning the Sabbath and the holy days. I'd like you to turn to Deuteronomy 6. In Deuteronomy 6, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God and keep his statutes and his commandments which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, and that the days of your life may be prolonged. Therefore, hear, O Israel, and be careful to observe it, that it may be well with you, and that you may multiply greatly, as the Lord of our fathers has promised you, a land flowing with milk and honey." Those are the promises if we kept the laws, but obviously we're being cursed because the nations are breaking the laws. Look at entertainment today. Movies glorify sex, infidelity, and violence. And if you do an analysis on what drives the internet, it's pornography. Pornography actually drives. That's the engine that drives the internet. Every potato you buy has been genetically altered. It's got human genes in it. And the irony is, brethren, I think Europe is resisting this genetically altered, and I believe you have to have it marked in the packaging. In the United States and Canada, they are not required to mark on the packaging that the food you're buying is genetically altered. There's scorpion genes, I believe, in strawberries. It helps them resist the heat. I mean, it just goes on and on. You know, the pollution, the corruption of everything we have in this world by Satan. Some employers endanger the lives of employees rather than employ safety standards and safe work conditions. Governments are corrupt. The saying goes, power corrupts, and total power corrupts totally. People enter politics with good intentions. Later, they're at the trough, like most of the rest of them, taking full advantage of their positions, ensuring a big fat pension at the end. And ironically, in Canada, if you are retired from a regular job, the maximum pension you can get is 70% of your salary. And it's indexed, which means if inflation goes up, the limit on index is 3%. So if inflation is 10%, you get a 3% increase. Politicians have a fully indexed pension, and they can get 100% of their salary. So, I mean, whether they're retired, and they only have to serve 2 terms, so they could serve 8 years, get a full pension, fully indexed. But the common man doesn't have such privileges. We have homeless living in despair. The rich are getting richer and the poor getting poorer. The nation is in debt and it gets worse every year. Individuals are in debt over their ears. They are expecting the interest rates to rise and a huge amount of mortgage defaults because people will no longer be able to afford their payments. They'll just walk away from their homes. They won't be able to afford it. This will be an economic tidal wave in our countries. The problem is reaching insurmountable proportions with no viable solution in sight. Keep in mind that although Satan hates God, would like to take over the universe, hates God's people, would like to kill God and God's people, he will in the future have some of us put to death, and as Christ said, the love of many would wax cold. This is in the church, brethren. Brethren, the one thing Satan cannot do is separate us from the love of God and Jesus Christ. Wives are admonished to submit to their husbands in the Lord, which is both submission and obedience. We husbands are to submit ourselves to our husband, Jesus Christ, since he is the head of the church, which is going to marry Christ when he returns to this earth. The church is both in submission and obedience to Christ. If we do this faithfully, we will be in the kingdom ruling with Christ when he returns and establishes the kingdom of God on this earth. Satan and his demons will be not able to influence the earth since they will be put away for 1,000 years. And that's covered in Revelation 20, verse 1 and 2. Revelation 20. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having the key of the bottomless pit and a great chain in his hand, and he laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. Conditions are bad now, but brethren, they will get worse beyond our imagination. Billions will die. The earth will be rocked with violence and earthquakes. Let's have a look at Isaiah 24. Isaiah 24 and verse 19, it says, "The earth is violently broken, the earth is split open, the earth is shaken exceedingly. The earth shall reel to and fro like a drunkard, and shall totter like a hut. Its transgression shall be heavy upon it, and it will fall and not rise again." Conditions will be so bad that mankind would be, if allowed to go on, would be totally wiped off the earth. But for the elect's sake, that will not happen, and Christ will intervene in the affairs of man and establish a whole new world. What I'd like to do for the balance of the sermon, brethren, is look at this new era, what it will be like. Well, the good news is everyone will learn to keep the Sabbath. Let's turn over to Ezekiel 46. People may look at you funny now, but it will be a different story then. In Ezekiel 46, in verse 3, it says, "Likewise the people of the land shall worship at the entrance of this gateway before the Lord on the Sabbaths and the new moons." Notice, brethren, it says Sabbaths, plural, which includes the holy days. And if you turn down to verse 11, it says that at the festivals and at the appointed feast days, the grain of the offering shall be an ephah for a bull, an ephah for a ram, and such as he wants to give for the lambs, and a hin of oil for every ephah. Also notice in Zechariah 14, and verse 16, it says, "And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and keep the Feast of Tabernacles." Now that'll be really great, won't it, brethren? Everyone keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. "And it shall be that whichever families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the King of King of hosts, on them shall be no rain." I read this a little earlier. "And if the family of Egypt will not come up and enter in, they shall have no rain. They shall receive the plagues which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This is the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." There will be no more religious confusion. Everyone will know the Lord. Come to understand that God is a family, not a trinity, not singular in nature. Mankind will finally learn to worship God in spirit and in truth. Turn over to John 4. John 4 and verse 23, Christ speaking, it says, "But the hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshippers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking some such to worship him." And that will be a fact accomplished in the millennium. The earth will have to undertake tremendous healings, beginning from Jerusalem. Let's have a look at what Ezekiel says about this in Ezekiel 47. If you'd like to turn there with me to Ezekiel 47. Ezekiel Ezekiel 47, beginning in verse 1. Then he brought me back to the door of the temple, and there was water flowing under the threshold of the temple towards the east, for the front of the temple faced east, and the water was flowing from under the right side of the temple, south of the altar. So what he was doing, he was facing the temple. It was in front of him, facing the door. And of course, if the door was facing east, he was looking westward. And to the right of the door, which would be in the northern part, there was water coming out, but it was south of the altar. Now, the altar would have been north of where he stood. So the water was coming out, going eastward, but he was looking at it, and of course, he was facing west. He brought me out by way of the north gate. So that means he went to his right, out the north gate, which would be to his right if he's facing east, and led me around on the outside. So he went around and come back on the other side of the wall, is what he's talking about, of the gate that faces eastward, and there the water was running out on the right side. So he went around the wall, and now he's facing the wall rather than the temple, and there's a gate there, but the water's coming out of the right side of the wall, heading east, and of course, he's still looking west. Then the man went out to the east, which makes sense, because the water's flowing that way, so he's heading behind him now, east, with a line in his hand, and he measured 1,000 cubits and brought me through the waters, and the water came up to my ankle. So it was just that close to the temple and the wall of his only ankle deep, 2 or 3 inches. And he measured another 1,000, and he brought me through the waters, and now the water came up to his knees. So there's quite an increase in volume by just 1,000 cubits, and the cubit's about 18 inches, so I haven't done the math, but it's probably about 1/4 mile, something like that. Again, he measured 1,000 cubits and brought me through the waters, and the water was waist deep. Now it's up to his waist when he crosses through. He's less than a mile away from the temple. And verse 5, again he measured 1,000, and it was a river that could not cross, for the water was too deep, water which one must swim, a river that could not be crossed. So less than 2 miles from the temple, it was a huge river he couldn't cross. And verse 6, and he said to me, Son of man, have you seen this? Then he brought me and returned me to the bank of the river. Then I returned there along the bank of the river. There were many trees on the side and the other. In verse 8, then he said to me, this is the water flowing toward the eastern region, goes down into the valley and enters the sea. When it reaches the sea, the waters are healed. Excuse me. And it shall be that every living thing that moves wherever the rivers go will live, and there will be a great multitude of fish because these waters go there, for they will be healed, and everything will live wherever the river goes. And it shall be that fishermen will stand by it, by En-Gedi and En-Englim, that will be places for spreading their nets. Their fish will be the same kinds as the fish of the great sea, exceedingly many. So we see that at that time, there will be healing of the oceans and, of course, healing of the nations. With God's Spirit readily available, it'll be a time of spiritual healing also. And, of course, in verse 11, but its swamps and marshes will not be healed. They will be given over to salt. So this river is coming out, and it, because of all the plagues and everything that's happened on the earth, it's actually cleaning up as it goes along, healing the waters. And we have read earlier where the fish have all died. It's almost like they're being regenerated as the waters spread out. I mean, clean waters, clean fish. I mean, it's horrible today. Pollution has reached fish, mercury in the fish, and you won't have all of that. This will be totally healing waters as they go out. And, of course, they'll keep going out and eventually clean up all the waters of the whole earth. Now, where will Christ rule from, brethren? Let's over in Ezekiel 48, just the next page, in verse 35, it says, all the way around shall be 18,000 cubits, and the name of the city, this is Jerusalem, from that day shall be the Lord is there. So we know that Christ will be ruling from Jerusalem at that time. Isaiah also gives us a glimpse of the millennium. If you'd like to turn to Isaiah 2. Isaiah 2, in verse 2, it says, "Now it shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the Lord's house shall be established on the top of the mountains and shall be exalted above the hills, and nations shall flow into it." In verse 3, "Many people shall come and say, 'Come and let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob. He will teach us of his ways.'" You notice the attitude. "He will teach us of his ways, and we shall walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, and he shall judge between the nations, and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. Notice the law of God shall go forth from Jerusalem. There won't be any more wars. A time of peace for 1,000 years, unheard of in the annals of human history. Tanks will be turned into tractors, spears into pruning hooks." Let's go over to Isaiah 11. In the book of Isaiah, Isaiah 11 and verse 6, it says, "The wolf also shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and the little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze, their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw with the ox. The nursing child will play in the cobra's hole, and the weaned child shall put his hand on the viper's den, and they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain. The nature of wild beasts will be altered, and none shall make them afraid." True freedom at last. And we were driving down the other day, and we were looking at these nice green pastures here, and we were looking at the lambs, and I said, just think, in the millennium, you'll see the lions there licking the lambs, saying, "Last week I was eating them, this week I'm licking them." Homes will be built and most likely be heated and cooled with non-polluting fuel cells powered by solar energy. I can't see them using, you know, fossil fuels. I mean, this is just my own idea, incidentally. We will have automobiles. Will we have automobiles? Well, if we do, brethren, we won't. They'll probably be powered by solar, battery charged by the sun, automobiles also, because they're working on that technology today, and they do have some cars that run on solar energy. I was looking at a newspaper one day while I was waiting for a pizza, and I'm looking at it, and for only $1 million U.S., I can get a 500 horsepower Mustang that'll do 240 miles an hour for only $1 million U.S. But the problem is, where am I going to drive this thing? I mean, you know, 240 miles an hour. We won't have cars like that in the future. I mean, that's absolutely ridiculous. We won't live in such a frenzied pace, I mean, anymore. From what it says in Revelation 16:20, it says, "Then every island fled away, and the mountains were not found." I mean, going by this scripture alone, the topography of the earth will undergo radical changes, and all the continents will most likely come together. So the landmass will be one, like I believe it used to be. If you look at all the continents, they feel like a puzzle that go back together. So you don't, in other words, you'll be able to travel anywhere on the earth by land. Large ships will not be required, and neither will airplanes. Are there going to be planes? We don't know. But, I mean, people won't be in a big rush. I mean, why would you need a plane if you could travel by land and travel in a non-polluting, you know, type of environment? Well, we know they won't be required to transport people. They may be used for transporting goods. I don't really know, but the thing is, it won't be really necessary. Perhaps we'll have nice cruise ships, you know, for holidays rather than warships for war. Those will be a thing of the past. And I have a feeling things will slow down considerably, brethren. They'll slow down, like the saying goes, slow down and smell the rose. You know, everybody's in such a big rush. Each one of us will be responsible for cities from 1 to 10 and perhaps more, as Jesus Christ said in the parable of Luke 19, if you'd like to turn there. So we're going to have responsibilities, brethren, and we'll be heavily involved, and it'll never get boring. Luke 19. Beginning in verse 12, and he said, "And therefore he said, a certain nobleman went out into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. So he called 10 of his servants, delivered to them 10 minas, and said to them, do business till I come. But his citizens hated him, and he sent the delegation after him, saying, we will no longer have this man reign over us. And it was when he returned, having received the kingdom, that he commanded these servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Master, your manor has earned 10 minas. And he said to him, well done, good and faithful servants, because you have been faithful in a very little, have authority over 10 cities. Because he was faithful in a very little. And the second came, saying, Master, your manor has earned 5. And in verse 19, he says, likewise, he says, you also be over 5 cities. So the rewards are based on our works, brethren, in the future. Cities will have to be laid out. Planning is involved. I mean, energy to the homes will have to be provided. And it probably self-sufficient. In other words, every home will have a fuel cell and it provides enough energy to do heat and cool and whatever, using the energy from the sun. Waste disposal that still has to be dealt with. Layout of parks. I mean, you'll have the responsibility, if you're over 10 cities, how to lay out the city, how to lay out the parks. Where manufacturing is going to be located. There will be manufacturing. During the millennium, we have to prepare for billions coming up in the great white throne judgment period. This means housing, clothing, furniture, furnishings, pots and pans. Everything you need in the home has to be manufactured and built and ready. Lumber, brick, stone, finishing products for the homes, whether drywall or wood. Roofing materials, all these things have to be prepared ahead of time. The homes have to be built. And, of course, food production has to increase through the millennium to the point where you'll be able to feed the billions coming up in that 100-year period. And this all has to be done in that 1,000-year period. And this is quite an undertaking, brethren, because, you know, the first thing, you've got an earth that has been battered and beaten and, you know, it doesn't look the same anymore, and then that's got to be cleaned up and then rebuild it. Educational materials, Bibles, all have to be printed. You need printing presses and people to operate the equipment to do this. Farm implements and tractors are going to be required. And, of course, we know that the tanks are going to be converted to tractors. You need foundries and lathes and machines, tools to make the implements that you're going to require. And I think the most exciting aspect about this is families coming together in the knowledge and truth and worshiping God together. Now, that's going to be one of the biggest blessings of all, brethren, when your families that are probably looking down at your nose because you're here today in the future, probably in the white throne judgment period, but still in the future, will be able to sit down with you at services and your whole family together at the Feast of Tabernacles, family orientated. Not like we have today where families are scattered to the four winds. Families worshiping God together, praising God together, and singing hymns together for the glory of God. We know after the millennium, the New Jerusalem comes down, God Himself will dwell with man. We at that time will be sons and daughters of God. Let's have a look at Revelation 21. Revelation 21 in verse 3, it says, "And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and he shall be, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God." So there won't be any more religious confusion, the Babylon of confusion we have today. There'll be one God and his Son Jesus Christ on the earth. What a glorious future we have, brethren, ruling for eternity with Christ and God. So let's reflect on this during this feast and never lose sight, brethren, of the glorious future potential we all have if we remain faithful.